British Spy Stories, Season 1. Hi, this is MF Kelleher. This is the last episode of Season 1, Spy or Traitor. Stay listening at the end of the episode because there's a preview of Season 2, The Kill Order, on British Spy Stories. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon. Spy or Traitor, Episode 28. Six white super yachts move gently on the tide, straining on their mooring ropes in the port of Nice. It is mid-afternoon, and the crowds of people who flocked along the Quai Cassini on their way from lunch are starting to thin out. A few tourists admire the boats and take their picture in front of the giant craft. Gabrielle sits in white jeans, white shirt, and trainers at a small round metal table outside one of the cafes that sit next to the marina. A half-finished latte in front of her provides the reason for her to sit there without being bothered by the waiting staff. The day is warm. She can feel heat on her body and a sense of trepidation inside her. Her training for field operations gives her the mental and physical abilities to be calmer than a civilian would be in the same situation. But this particular meeting has become personal for reasons she can't quite fathom. It was personal before the fight on the MV Quarrel, but at last, now, she can clear the air. Two black Porsche Cayennes appear on the Boulevard Carnot, at the far eastern end of the port, and crawl around the road that circles the water. They stop. The back door of the first vehicle opens, and Sebastian Ulrich steps out. The mirrored car windows reveal nothing of who else might be inside. He walks across the tarmac and approaches Gabby. Catherine, three tables away in the cafe, nurses a large bag at her feet. "Charlotte?" is all he says as he sits down. She remains silent. A waiter approaches, but Ulrich waves him away. Gabby licks her lips. "I want to clear the air, Sebastian." Her voice is calm, not nervous, not pleading. "You owe me a jet ski," he says. "There's something you don't know." Her words slide out towards him.
"Oh, yeah?"
"You have a contract out on a British woman."
"I do," he says, still not connecting.
A frown appears between his eyes.
"She has proved slippery."
"Why do you want her dead?" He pauses before answering, still unsure of his ground. He seems to be weighing up why this crazy woman who fought with him on his boat would know about the contract. He relinquishes.
"She killed a friend of mine."
"Franz Keneally," says Gabby. He says nothing, but his eyes narrow, his brain trying to compute how two distinct parts of his life seem to be connected.
"You knew him?" he says.
"I killed him."
"Then came looking for me, too?"
He is still nowhere near working it all out. "You sent your guerrillas after me," she says. "I had to do something." He wipes his open hand across his face.
"What do you want?"
he says calmly, with the faintest whisper of threat mixed in. "Like I said, clear the air. Call a truce."
"Why would I agree to that?" he says.
"Because I can destroy you."
Ulrich laughs, and Kate turns her head at the very edge of Gabby's peripheral vision.
"You're way out of your league," he sneers, showing an insecurity about his status.
"Lost any drugs recently?" says Gabby.
"What?"
"One of your imports went up in flames, I hear."
He smiles.
"That was you."
"I can destroy you," she repeats. The words between them pause. They sit, not always looking at each other,
weighing up what they need to do. Seagulls bounce and glide on the warm air above the calm water of the marina, each gull alone, yet mutually dependent, if only for a fleeting moment.
"I can keep doing that until you remove my contract," she says. "That's the deal."
He says nothing. A bead of sweat sits on his hairline. He moves his fingers as though warming up for the piano in a display of what he thinks shows his control. "Let me think," he says after a minute. He stands and turns back to the two Porsches. A silence seems to envelop the whole area. No sound emanates from the yachts or the cars in the vicinity. Ulrich takes four steps. Then, as Gabby and Catherine had predicted when they had been planning this operation, he swings around, his Gratch handgun drawn. His first shot is wildly wide. Gabrielle dives under the table and de-holsters her Smith & Wesson. Catherine already has a Beretta in her hand. Simultaneously with the first shot being fired, four doors of the Porsches open, and seven men, dressed head to toe in black, emerge at speed. Ulrich's second shot is closer and hits the table above her head. Catherine fires one round, a warning shot only. The bullet hits the ground 3 inches from his left foot. He turns, and only then realizes Gabby is not operating solo. Ulrich runs towards the group of men who are spreading out across the width of the road. Catherine lets off two more rounds and takes down two of the men. They fall injured but not killed, the way she prefers to operate. The five remaining gunmen respond and regroup. Gabby waves two fingers in the direction of the sea as a move-out signal, and she and Kate run alternately, each covering the other, constantly under fire, until they reach the Place Guinemé that occupies the corner of the land at the edge of the marina. Ulrich's men follow, constantly firing but not landing any hits on the women. Catherine does hit a third man in the leg, and he falls to the ground. Ulrich talks to his troops with much arm-waving as they pull together a battle plan. They split into two groups and attack the flanks of Gabby and Catherine, who take cover behind a low building on the quay.
"You take that group, Kate," says Gabby.
Catherine signals acceptance of the order. One shot from Ulrich's men skims off the wall, and Gabby is showered with concrete chips on her face. The speed of the impact slits her skin in three places, and blood comes to the surface. She wipes it away and returns to the attack. Kate's superior weapons training continues to pay off, but the remaining four are narrowing the gap between Gabby and Kate, making headway towards the building that provides their cover. Gabrielle signals again to Kate, and the women run west along the coastline and onto the roadway that stretches from the marina to the beaches. They sprint to a set of motorbike parking bays set on one side of the road. They pick the locks of two BMW R1250 bikes that have been left there. They drop the clutches and ride off towards the old town, leaving Ulrich and his henchmen in the distance. As Ulrich reaches the bike racks, two tourists arrive on Ducati scramblers. The gang attack them and take their machines. Ulrich and one gunman mount up and give chase after Gabby and Kate. Four motorcycles cascade through the traffic on the Quai des États-Unis, weaving each side of vehicles, swerving to avoid members of the public who are trying to cross the road between the cars. Ulrich and his sideman are slowly making ground, reducing the distance between them and their quarries. The machines fly out of the heavy traffic and onto the Promenade des Anglais, the main drag through Nice and alongside the beaches that are full of bathers and sun worshippers. On the open road, Ulrich pushes his bike to the limit and, when the gap is 15 yards, draws his weapon and fires at Gabby. Meanwhile, Ulrich's man is nearing Kate and follows his master's lead by letting off a round, which hits her fuel tank. Ulrich fires again and hits Gabby's wing mirror. Kate's tank starts to spill out the noxious odour of petrol, but she pushes the machine further. They hit a patch of heavier traffic and return to their swerving approach to get through the density of vehicles. Gabby and Kate draw up level with each other, and Kate signals to turn off. They drive across the pavement and down onto the grey pebbles of the beach. It gives them 30 seconds of breathing space before the chasers catch up.
"My tank's hit," shouts Catherine. "I'm losing power."
Gabby signals for them to stop.
"Time to face the music," she says,
and they both put their machines on the stand and duck down behind them. Ulrich and his plus one appear at the top of the beach. They stop when they see the women waiting.
"Where are we?"
says Catherine, inspecting her handgun and reloading.
"Almost at the airport."
The men stop.
"What are they waiting for?"
"Wondering where our weak spot is, I imagine," says Gabby.
"You're bleeding,"
says Kate.
"Ricochet, it's nothing."
"Let's talk,"
calls Ulrich.
"Okay,"
she shouts back. He makes a big play of putting his handgun down on the stones.
"Cover me, Kate,"
says Gabby, and she gets up from behind the bikes. The two leaders walk out towards each other and stop when they are 30 feet apart, each facing the other.
"Your friend is a good shot," says Ulrich.
"MI6 trains us well,"
she says.
"Your MI6.
Did you think we were just some random women out to ruin your life?"
"I get it now,"
he smiles. Gabby can sense his henchmen in the background, with weapon drawn.
"We know all about you, Sebastian."
"What do you want?" he says.
"I told you the deal. We know all your operations. We know your contacts. We are ready to move on your whole organization."
"I'll cancel the contract on you."
He holds out his hand. She waits, then walks towards him and offers her hand too. As soon as her fingers near his, he grabs her wrist, pulls her towards him, and tries a hold on her, but Gabby twists out of it. He draws his arm back and lands a punch on her cheek. She is momentarily stopped. She wavers. Then her blood rises, and her focus comes back. She turns and throws a kick to his groin, then another backwards on the other foot. Ulrich's henchman starts to shoot and walk forwards. Catherine returns fire, resting on the BMW, but a bullet hits her in the shoulder. She continues to fire at both Ulrich and the other man, and gradually pushes them back. Ulrich realizes they are being outgunned and retreats, running back to his bike and abandoning his man. Catherine can see blood through her jacket. She takes aim with a last surge of bravado. In her sight, the muzzle wavers as the pain makes its presence felt. She unleashes a shot. It hits the man squarely in the chest, and he keels over. Gabby runs to the remaining Ducati, opens the throttle, and gives chase to Ulrich. She pushes the machine as fast as it will go. Ulrich is 30 yards ahead, but Gabby is closing the gap. The yawning space of the sea stretches to their left. On the horizon, the Nice Côte d'Azur airport looms as they speed their way through the September afternoon. Ulrich looks back repeatedly as, minute by minute, Gabby is gaining on him. They swerve down to a route near the water's edge, churning up spray from the shallows as their machines hurtle through the water. Gabby takes the opportunity of a smooth stretch to take out her handgun and fire off some rounds, to Ulrich's obvious surprise. She doesn't land any shots, and he swerves the bike to escape the onslaught. She suspects that Ulrich doesn't realize that the beach ends at the airport. As the grey buildings that provide storage and services for airlines grow steadily nearer, Gabrielle thinks through the choices that Ulrich has. In the end, he takes the obvious option and storms off the pebbles and onto the access road system around the airport. She follows suit and is glad to be on solid tarmac, as she can control the bike more effectively. She scouted the area 2 days ago and knows that all the roads are dead ends and terminate with fencing around the airport. Ulrich takes one turn and, frustrated by no through route, turns away wildly and along the fencing. The machines roar at frightening speed along the wire wall. Ulrich searching for freedom. Gabby waiting for closure. The fence turns an abrupt left, and Ulrich skids around. A grass bank sits between the road and the fence, built up to provide a measure of protection if any accidents happen on the carriageway. His mind races, but he is pushed into the only choice left open. He throws the throttle wide, leans back, runs up the grass bank, and launches his machine at the fence. It rises with its momentum, up off the earth. The tires nearly hit the fence, but clear the top with half an inch to spare. Gabby sees his jump, stops her machine, then rebalances, opens her throttle, and heads for the fence. Like Ulrich, she leans back as the wheels go skyward. With the same power and a lighter frame, she sails over the barrier. Her impact on the other side is less skillful, though, and her bike rolls over, taking her with it. She tumbles painfully across the concrete on the other side of the fence, and a long stretch of skin is torn from her leg. Ulrich fell too, but is already back on his motorbike. Gabby hauls up her machine. The pain from her injury throbs, and redness is starting to stain one leg of her trousers. But she has to go on. She screams out loud as she pulls together all of her remaining reserve to get back on the bike. She is damaged now, she knows it, but her mental drive is undimmed and will now have to override the physical pain. She speeds out from behind the service buildings and looks for Ulrich. He is 50 yards away. She gives chase. Ulrich decides to take a route across the airport and breaks out in the direction of the taxiways. He drops his speed to navigate his way with caution, and Gabby makes up some ground. She is near enough for a shot with her Smith & Wesson and pulls out her weapon. She releases one round. It hits him on the arm, but he doesn't slow. She takes another shot, this time at the bike, but misses. Ulrich's attention is drawn towards her. In that instance, he realizes too late that he has stopped on the landing strip. An aircraft coming in can't avoid a collision. Gabby watches as the undercarriage catches his head, and his frail body is thrown up into the air, then down with a sickening bloody bounce onto the runway. The shower is warm on her back. Gabrielle stays under the water longer than normal, letting the memories of the last days and weeks run through her mind. She was angry when she heard that Murphy had put untrained people into the field to try and complete Project Hillbank. The deaths of the two embassy staff is unforgivable. They would have stood no chance when the professional killer had struck in the safe house. The loss of Alexander, too, is a tragedy, particularly given his age. Already, intelligence has started to come into MI6 about how Sebastian Ulrich's empire is being carved up by the criminal fraternity. There have already been deaths as a consequence, but Dima Lebedev is the one who seems to be gaining the most from Ulrich's demise. She wraps herself in her dressing gown and takes her coffee to the balcony to let the day seep into her consciousness. Berlin is mulling over whether to be warm or cold. Flecks of white mottle the navy blue sky, and the weak sun basks over the broad cityscape. The conversation with Sir Bernard McIntosh 2 days ago, after he received the mole information, was one of those unique opportunities to discuss matters openly that only come about rarely in the SIS. She had sat on a secure video link on the dirty side of the Berlin embassy, just her and Sir Bernard. They went through all of the data and information that she had sent via Hans. He wanted to know all the details, every nuance fact, every second of the operational tracking data that she had unearthed. The intel revealed the mole, but she was surprised herself when Lawton's name had emerged from what she'd discovered. The Berlin link is still unclear to her, though, and Sir Bernard implied that there was data that the investigations branch had found that gives a bigger picture, but he didn't share that with her. Riverside sent her a message the next day, too, almost but not quite apologizing. It was of no consequence. They are both soldiers doing a job, and sometimes the job needs objective action, no matter what you feel personally. Hans invites her to lunch and she drives across town to the Met Bar. There are only 2 customers in the place as she arrives. She and Hans talk about Nice and the mole and their lives and dreams.
"Murphy's going to London, did you hear?"
he says.
"Promotion?"
"Unclear,"
says Hans.
"But he seemed pleased, so I guess so."
"Did you know those 2 who were killed in the safe house?"
she says.
"No."
"Why would Murphy put them on it?"
"Crazy."
"And he got promoted for that."
"I know."
"And Murphy made that weird decision to call in the GISS when Matt was killed," she says. "What was that about?"
"You miss him," says Hans.
"Yeah,"
she says, looking down.
"He was a good friend. We'd known each other since the beginning. He was the one who encouraged me to think that there is a life beyond MI6. A way to stop, you know? That idea that there can be an escape hatch has kept me going for years."
"Don't you like the job?"
says Hans.
"I love the job,"
she says.
"That's not it. It's the idea that you can press the button someday. Living like this. Lying, fighting, and killing. Pretending to be someone else. Telling your friends and parents that you're just an anonymous clerk somewhere in the British Civil Service. It's what I live for. Every day."
Hans watches her come down from an emotional rise. One of the men in the cafe approaches them.
"I'll get your bill, mate,"
says Hans, and goes to the till.
"I couldn't help overhearing what you said," says the man.
"Oh, I was just ranting about my job. Sorry if I disturbed you."
"I agree with you. You must always have a way to get out." "It's essential. Well, what's the point of it?"
"Black Hawk." She stops and turns her head to the man.
"Mac?" she says.
"Hello, Gabby."
Keep listening for a preview of Season 2, The Kill Order, on British Spy Stories. She walks to the back door of the house, listens for activity, and hears none. She produces a set of short metal tools and inserts them into the lock. 2 swift turns and she hears a click inside the mechanism. She unholsters her Beretta M9 handgun and raises it to her shoulder height, then turns the door handle. Inside, the first room is the kitchen. 2 side lights are on, but there is no one in sight. She steps across the floor tiling, black and white against her black leggings and boots. She can hear her breaths, steady, measured, impatient. Catherine pushes her head around the doorframe into the next room, which is the lounge. Again, no one is there, and she steps lightly through into the space. A fire is alight at the far end of the room, and she can feel the heat from 20 feet away. She waits, taking in the layout of the room. There are stairs on one side, sofas and 2 chairs, and no evidence of inhabitants. But they must be somewhere. Catherine takes a breath out, moves one long leg towards the base of the stairwell. She hears a slight click behind her. Stops. And starts to turn.